This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Hello and welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, Death and Sex Appeal, Assassins in Speculative Fiction.
So this week's episode was kind of inspired by a brief sort of conversation that we had where we were remarking upon the way that assassins are written in fiction. And we've touched on this in previous episodes. And we suddenly went, what is it about assassins being sexy?
Yeah, why are they all super sexy?
Why are they all sexy? Which kind of triggered these sort of thoughts about the relationship between sex and death, and why, you know, why is death considered sexy in modern fiction? Because I mean, that's what assassins are, you know, they're harbingers of death. And you know, like, the Grim Reaper isn't particularly sexy. But I mean, I guess it depends what you're into. But like, for the most part, bones don't do it for me.
Yeah, it really is this. I suppose this idea that there's this extreme person who absolutely could kill you, but won't for obvious reasons. I mean, we don't need to go too far down the whole elemental assassin and dark brotherhood and type route where it's paranormal romance, and to be honest, some of those books are kind of rapey as well. But the sort of male assassin characters are natural, buff and beautiful, and you know, they'd kill you as soon as look at you, except for that one girl, the plain girl next door, who somehow manages to wrap them around her little finger, even though she's utterly boring. It's bizarre, completely and utterly bizarre. But there are good assassins in fiction as well, and I really, really love assassins. And as I was saying before, not in a I want to cuddle them way, not in an assassin cuddling.
Yeah, there's a new extreme sports for you.
Yeah. Assassin cuddling.
Cuddling. Coming soon to the Olympics. 2020, assassin cuddling. You've got to get in and out as quickly as possible.
I doubt you'd survive.
Points are for, you know, quality of hug, length of hug. And whether you actually survive. Anyway.
I'm glad we've gone to a silly place straight away.
Yeah, you can't compete if you yourself are an assassin.
Yeah, that sort of changed. Anyway, we're getting off topic already.
Yeah. Anyway, so I think probably the first thing to do is to actually address what makes assassins cool. Because really, if we look at them in a, you know, properly, outside of fiction, assassins are not cool.
Well, no, they kill for money. You can't argue that these are the good guys. They're not white hats. They're really not. You know, at best, they're morally grey. At worst, they're kind of the bad guys. You're reading about an anti-hero if you've got an assassin as the main character. Or in theory, you should be. There's a whole can of worms I'm going to open later about assassins who never actually kill anyone.
Yeah, which we will be addressing in a minute. But the whole, if you know, dissect the word assassin, what does assassin mean? And it literally does mean killing for money. Or I guess you could argue that an assassin doesn't necessarily kill for money. They might have political reasons. You can have political assassins. I mean, Guy Fawkes would have been an assassin. He wasn't doing it for money, and he was willing to die whilst doing it as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, they are professional murderers, or in some way, you know, this is a murder. It's different from murder, it's assassination.
Going back to assassins and motivations, yeah, as you said, it can be a political reason. It's usually money. Generally, it's quite a cold thing. You know, it's a job. It's something to do for a job. Or, you know, it's a way of getting access to somebody that they wouldn't ever otherwise have access to, or access to training, etc., etc.
I think the key thing is that there's a lot of premeditation which is involved, and obviously murder is by definition premeditated. Killing someone in a premeditated fashion, but you can sort of kill someone in the heat of a moment. You don't really assassinate someone in the heat of a moment.
No, you can't sort of like plan. Yeah, you can't plan somebody's death in detail and then claim that, oh yeah, I was having a moment kind of thing. So.
Yeah, and there is crossover between murder and assassination. I think a lot of people, if a high powered individual is. By which I mean, you know, societally. I don't mean superpowered. if they are, you know, killed, murdered, then it's usually called an assassination.
Yeah, particularly if it's for political reasons. And I suppose that's the thing. In real life, would we consider assassins cool or sexy at all? Because I don't think we would. Nobody's sort of sitting around jonesing for Lee Harvey Oswald, for example.
No.
You know, it's just not. Or at least I don't think they are.
Yeah. So what is it that makes them cool in fiction? And I can't deny, you know, you get an assassin character in fiction, you're like, ooh, edgy. Like, I actually kind of like them. You can do a lot with them. And it's an interesting query. Why do we like them in fiction?
I mean, I personally, they can either be quite tortured anti-heroes in a good way.
Yeah.
Not in a boring way. Or they can literally just be they can be perfectly pleasant, charming individuals who just happen to kill for money. It's like, that's my job, it's not personal kind of thing. And I kind of like that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. In terms of, I think maybe one of the reasons that we quite like them in fiction is that they make for interesting characters, because you have to be a certain kind of individual to be able to murder frequently as part of a job.
Yeah, to compartmentalise. Rather like spies, obviously, you have to be able to compartmentalise a lot in order to operate.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing about it is that in fiction, we really like skilled individuals. We like people who do things in a very skilled way, so they're the best at their job. We love seeing it. We especially love it in films, you know, when you have the genius at one particular area and they can just do better than anyone else. And
yeah.
We love it. We really like it. And when it's like he's a genius at killing people, it is kind of... Well, it's interesting.
Competence is sexy.
Yeah, competence is sexy. And you know, having skills is sexy. And again, I think... It's obviously very important to identify that there is a big difference between saying that in terms of reality and saying that in terms of fiction. There are so many characters from books who I absolutely love and I want the best for them and I love them. But, you know, if they existed in real life, I'd want them in prison.
Well, yeah, you don't even want them wandering around. And I suppose that's the thing. That's the real life fantasy divide, isn't it? Because real life, as we say, you wouldn't find anything particularly engaging or interesting about assassins in real life. Or they're not even necessarily very intelligent, some of them. It's just a case of any idiot can pull a trigger. Where it falls in their favour is when the person... who is the target has no idea that they are the target of an assassination until after it's happened and it's too late.
Mm. Yeah. So there's lots of reasons why we might like kind of assassins, and it's got to be said. I mean, again, I'm not big on the whole murder thing. But, you know, when you're watching a film and the bad guy gets expertly killed, like, okay, spoilers here for Game of Thrones, but let's talk about Joffrey. I was cackling the whole way through his death.
I was annoyed because it wasn't a bad enough death.
I loved it. I loved his death. I thought it was great. I mean, it would have been great if he hurt even more. I'd had fantasies about the worst possible things happening. To this boy, it was great, and I would have been happy to see them all. There would have been no pity, and I would have been especially pleased, you know, for that kind of assassin. I've been like, yeah, good job. I would have liked anyone who killed Joffrey. I like Arya Stark, and she goes around murdering quite a few people, you know. I mean, she literally does work as an assassin at one point. That's
she does.
Kind of what she is.
In fact. Well, since we were talking about Game of Thrones, let's talk about Arya Stark, because she has one of the longest character arcs so far in the series in terms of reward and her having actually got somewhere by the time you get through a certain number of the books. And yeah. you only, I mean, it's a bit like Bran as well. Mm. Both of them don't really own very much power. They have plenty of agency, but they don't have a lot of actual power that can be used against all these people who've been oppressing them.
Yeah.
Until quite far on into the series. And it's so satisfying when you finally get there, because you've followed her through all this, and she goes through some quite bad stuff.
She does, yeah.
In order to get there. And it's great. We want her to be this little, I don't want to use the word psychopath, but she's kind of gone in that direction a little bit.
Yeah.
She's not. She's got tendencies. And it's understandable considering everything that she's been through. But she's still very much in possession of her own mind. She has her own motivations. She does still see other people as real people. She's not killing just because she enjoys it. I mean, but she does enjoy it as well.
Yeah, but I think it's very much the people she targets. She takes pleasure from killing people who she feels deserves it.
Yeah.
She's almost kind of a political assassin in that she's also taking revenge, and she's writing things as far as she's concerned.
Yeah, it is a huge god complex, though, the idea that you can choose who deserves who to live and who deserves to die.
Yeah, but the other thing, the important thing to remember is that this is within a setting where that's kind of exactly what's happening. It's very different from the modern world. You know, killing kind of has a slightly different connotation. I mean, it's a slightly different connotation. People still end up dead, you know, for the most part. Sometimes they don't. a certain Jon Snow. But regardless, it's a little bit different. It's a different kind of system. There's no real sense of justice in Westeros. It's just whoever happens to have the power at any time.
Oh yeah, I'd quite happily read the entire series if it was just Arya start killing people off a list. You know, I'm down with that storyline. I'm fine with it. But
yeah, and the interesting thing about Arya Stark is that at one point the Hound is on her list, but she forgives him. Or rather, she finds that she can't kill him. She doesn't want to kill him.
She loses the desire to kill him. That's what I mean about it being quite a huge god complex, because it's almost childish initially in the way that she clings to this idea of a list of people who deserve to die.
Yeah.
And that keeps her going, and that's a good thing. But the fact that a little bit closer knowledge of one of the members of the list shows that there are flaws in this plan, because perhaps better knowledge of what's going on would make her consider her allegiances a bit more.
Yeah.
I mean, there'd be some people on the list who'd be dead anyway, like Cersei and the Mountain and what have you, but it is still quite a childish and unnuanced viewpoint, in the sense of she doesn't have all the knowledge to make informed choices about who actually really probably should die because they're the mastermind, and who was really a cat's paw.
Yeah, and I think it's also, you know, important to identify the fact that, of course, it's like that. She's literally a child.
Yeah.
And as she grows, she changes her tune, but she's still very much bent on getting her own power and her own agency back, and also, you know, hitting back at the people who've hurt her so badly. And moving over into the series, you know, what she does to Walder Frey is, whew, good stuff.
I was cackling at that. That was brilliant. Although you could argue that in some respects, Elena was actually a more effective assassin, because nobody knew it was her until she admitted it in killing Joffrey.
Yeah, this is true. But then the point is that no one knows that Arya Stark is the one who killed Walder Frey, apart from Walder Frey, because she reveals herself so that he knows that that he done fucked up.
Yeah, fair point. It's like, I'm going to go around wearing other people's faces, and I'm going to take yours now.
Fun stuff.
It is good fun, yeah.
I'm just kind of waiting for John Stark to come. John Stark, I keep calling him that. Sorry, John Snow to come back. For him to be like, "What happened to Walder Frey?" And Arya just be like, "Oh yeah, I killed him. I stole his face. I baked his sons into some pies." And Sansa's just looking on in horror, and John's like, "Good job."
I kind of think Sansa's more sort of like, "Yeah, I understand how these things are done now. You go off and do what you need to do."
Yeah. Well, the thing with Sansa Stark is that, yeah, she does kind of understand the nasty things of it though. But there is this great bit in the series where Arya is just there like, "Yeah, he was on my list." And Sansa's like, "The list?" And Arya just goes, "The list of people I'm going to kill." And you see Sansa's face like, right. Okay.
That's probably a good point to talk just briefly about antisocial personality disorder, which is the proper way of saying that someone might be a sociopath or a psychopath. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail because I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist of any description, but it is worth looking at this because quite a lot of the characters that fit into spy and assassin type character roles do exhibit a lot of these sort of traits. Psychologists and psychiatrists, doctors of all kinds, do not use the word sociopath or psychopath when diagnosing somebody. The proper term is antisocial personality disorder. And the fact that somebody might be diagnosed with this does not necessarily mean that they are, in fact, a murderer set on a spree. Yeah. But, okay, looking at the more, we'll use sociopath just at the moment, just because it's a term that more people understand, just so that I can make the connection with these sort of traits.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd expect things like glibness and superficial charm, manipulative behaviour, a knack of conning people, inability to recognise the rights of others, and seeing self-serving behaviour as permissible, even desirable, pathological lying, lack of remorse, shame or guilt, shallow emotions generally, incapacity for love, not sure about that one actually, need for constant stimulation, as in they get bored really, really quickly, general lack of empathy, can be irresponsible and unreliable, parasitic lifestyle, manipulative and reckless behaviour in order to acquire what they want. Now, that does fit with quite a lot of assassin and spy type characters, as we know, and we'll go into some of them in a minute. The difference here between what we would understand someone on the sociopathic end of the spectrum of antisocial personality disorder and psychopathic end of the spectrum is that sociopaths tend to feel a bit more than psychopaths do, but they care about it less, whereas psychopaths don't really feel it, but are much better at aping it a lot of the time. Generally, psychopaths don't see people as actually people. They see them as things to be used. So there is crossover between the two. It is all part of a bigger spectrum, as it were. Same with toxic narcissism and the most scary one, which is a toxic empath. That's somebody who feels everything and just genuinely doesn't care. Sees that as keys, basically, to take over somebody else and manipulate them, because that's how they get their kicks, kind of thing. And again, these aren't necessarily bad people. These aren't necessarily immediately killers. It just means that something is missing there. So in some ways, it's like any other sort of disorder. And it can be a mental illness as well. Most of the time when we say someone is a sociopath, what we mean is they're displaying sociopathic tendencies. We don't mean they genuinely do have antisocial personality disorder. And that is clearly the case with a lot of these types of characters.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the interesting things that you pointed out there was charming.
Yes.
And that's actually something that we see a lot of psychopaths. I mean, Hannibal Lecter is probably a really good example.
Yeah.
Highly charming. Very, very charming. And it's a phenomenon which has been recorded with psychopathic murderers. They are very, very charming. They're very, and as you say, they're manipulative. And in order to be manipulative, you've got to exude the sense that, you know, people kind of want to listen to you. And the whole point is that they're deceptive. And something, you know, we've got to kind of lay out straight here. Psychopaths are not, as you said, not inherently bad people. And they're actually useful within our society, particularly during times of crisis, because they are able to detach themselves. Well, they're already detached from this basic level of empathy that most other people have, which means that they can make harder decisions, which are for the benefit of all.
Yeah.
So, and you know, you see them a lot in leadership roles, or people who at least have psychopathic tendencies or sociopathic tendencies as well. They make for good leaders because they can kind of distance themselves. And also because they're charming, because they, yeah. And I think that's probably actually one of the reasons why where we get these kinds of assassin characters from, or where we also possibly this kind of association between charming death. And I think it's also because it's this really great kind of juxtaposition between death being messy and when I say death, I mean murder being messy and horrifying and disgusting, and then having a character who exudes complete calm, who is charming, well-spoken, who is so opposite of the violence and the violent thug, you know, which would be associated with this kind of crime. So I think that those are the two things which have fed into this whole sexy assassin thing. And it's the charming psychopath and it's the juxtaposition.
Yeah. Yeah, there is definitely, it adds a sort of glitter or glamour to the entire situation, doesn't it? In a fantasy setting, certainly.
Yeah, I think it also kind of, it makes the character even more interesting as well. And it creates this strange sort of sensation around death as well. You get this sudden, this kind of this chill. You see someone who can commit an act of murder and be completely calm about it. That's gonna stick with you. That's going to leave an impression.
Yeah. But
in terms of sexiness, let's kind of look at female assassins and their sexiness. And let's put Arya Stark to the side now for now, because she's obviously a child and it doesn't really apply with her. I kind of want to talk about Black Widow.
Yep.
Now, Black Widow is a really interesting character in terms of the way that she is developed over the series in Marvel over comics. You know, she's gone from being a very clear villain to one of the Avengers. and, you know, it was that originally she was an assassin, then she was a spy, and now she's a hero. And obviously in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, she's kind of all three. She went from being an assassin to a spy to a hero. And one thing that kind of annoys me is, on the one level, it makes sense. You know, she was trained to be unassuming, or rather be assuming in a very, very different sort of way. She's a very beautiful woman. She's highly you know, she's attractive, she's well-spoken, she's good at acting, she can play the victim, as we see, and she can, you know, draw people in. They don't expect her to be associated with death. And the problem with that now is that the beautiful killer woman is now so rampant in fiction that you'd take one look at Black Widow and you'd kind of know she was an assassin. You know what I mean?
Yeah. A lot of this goes back to like the crime noir type thing where they needed a female bad guy. So you automatically had the femme fatale. And that even goes back as far as Sherlock Holmes and even further than that, I think.
Yeah.
Because you have Irene Adler. Irene Adler is a femme fatale, a Victorian femme fatale. And you do have them further back. There's examples in lots of 19th century fiction, although clearly they're not wearing cat suits back then.
No.
But it's the idea that you have this beautiful morally very ambiguous, if not completely immoral, female character who is intelligent and desirable and utterly ruthless. And that was very appealing for a certain male market during the 19th century.
Yeah, and I think it was.
And then you get to things like Marvel and various other things, and it was really easy to just slot new characters into this femme fatale mode, and but give them extra, you know, like the whole super soldier program for Black Widow, and there are lots and lots of other examples. So yeah, in one respect, female assassins being quite sexual in how they're presented makes sense, because generally women are a bit smaller and physically not quite as strong as men. Although there's less of a difference than people think there is, particularly if someone's fit and trained. So it makes sense to disarm your opponent mentally by appearing to be much weaker and an easier target than you in fact are. And a good way to get close to someone is to appear to be a viable sexual option. And
yeah.
I mean, can you think of it... aside from when someone's asleep, can you think of an easier way to kill someone than, like, get them to the point where they literally think they're getting it on and then stabbing them? Just sheer practicality.
I mean, well, yes and no. On the one level, yes. If you, especially if you need to kill them in private, you don't want anyone to kind of to know you've killed them. But, like, I mean, to be honest, nowadays, I actually think that in this day and age, I actually think probably the best way to murder someone is to get in under their radar in a way that no one is going to pay attention to you. And if you are a small, plump woman in wearing, you know, in a uniform of the hotel or something like that, so you're a maid or something like that, you pass someone, you jab them with poison, and then walk away and the poison kills them 3 minutes later, no one's going to notice you. I think that they did it quite well in Poirot. There was an episode of Poirot, like the Deadly Iris or something like that, where, and sorry again, this is going to be a spoiler, but I love Poirot so much, but the way that the guy killed this woman is that he dressed up as a waiter during a show, and everyone's watching the show, and he just leans over. He's right next to her, and he leans over and pours her a glass of poisoned champagne. And of course, she doesn't look around to him because he's just the waiter.
Yeah,
she's more focused on anyone else. She sees the uniformed arm and maybe sort of glances around, but she doesn't look at him.
No, and I do agree with that. And the whole point is getting close enough to your target and still remaining invisible to them. But sexuality is actually a way of doing that. I mean, I'm not talking sexuality as in Lucille Ball in one of those big extravaganzas coming down in pink peacock feathers and it's like everyone look at me kind of thing.
No, I don't know, but I just think that everyone would remember the sexy woman.
Not necessarily. You know? How often do women just get overlooked?
I know,
I
but at the same...
it's far more likely that you get overlooked for being a woman in a dress and heels.
I'm not so sure, especially with, you know, characters like Black Widow. The whole point is that, you know, your eyes are immediately drawn to her. And the whole thing with the femme fatale is that that people just can't help but look. And I just think that actually, I'm not saying that an ugly character would equally also be very, very obvious, but someone who's just not quite that beautiful. And the problem is that you get these female assassins who are sex incarnate, and I'm like, that's just too noticeable. You couldn't go anywhere without people instantly recognizing you or knowing who you were. That, oh yeah, I remember her. She was blonde at the time, but God, I wouldn't mistake. Like, seriously.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. All I'm saying is that the sexual component is just another tool in the toolbox.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm not saying they should all be like that.
Yeah, and I think the problem is that they are all like that.
No, that's not true.
Okay,
definitely not true.
I think it's a very... Okay, they're not all. I mean, as I said, Arya Stark is a bit different, and you do have differences, but I just think that it's seen way too often now. It really is, and the whole very, very highly sexy assassin thing kind of it bores me, to
Yeah,
be
if you want to
honest.
say in film and TV, they tend to be like that, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I'm mostly going from books where most of the authors
Yeah.
have a bit more nuance.
Yeah, no, okay. Right. I am definitely speaking in terms of TV and cinema and things like that. Absolutely. And of course it doesn't help that everyone is beautiful in TV and cinema. But still, I just think, come on, guys. It's not actually that practical, I think, being highly sexy as an assassin. It's definitely not practical wearing heels all the time. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. If we shift our focus over to books, I think there's another strong association of assassins being sarcastic and funny. And I think that's also probably related to the fact that when we have characters, main characters, the current trend is that we do like sarcastic and funny characters. But that kind of that deathly sort of humor is quite commonplace in sort of assassin characters, I
Well,
think.
I mean, if you think about the sort of black humour you develop in, say, the NHS just in order to survive the job, can you imagine how much
Yeah.
worse that would be if you killed people for some for a living? So that's not actually that surprising.
No, not at all. Yeah. And again, I think the problem is that that's what makes them endearing as characters.
Yeah, real life assassins are not witty, intelligent, sexy, and all the rest of it. But we're
You sound
talking.
like you know some, Jules.
I'd have to kill you if I told you that.
Right, okay, never mind.
Moving on. Okay, right. There's two that I've got two little bugbears here that I do want to discuss.
Go on.
One of them is that, and I love the fact that there are so many more bi characters now in books.
Yeah.
Bi main characters, brilliant, bring it on. But a lot of assassins are bisexual. It would seem lately. And I'm down with that, I really am. And a lot of them don't feel like that it's just been crammed in for representation purposes or. But some of them seem to be bisexual because, well, they're already morally ambiguous and they're morally fluid, so they may as well be sexually fluid as well.
Yeah, I think it's this weird association between if you're morally ambiguous, you're more likely
You could.
to want to have sex with everybody.
Yeah.
And like, or you could be highly moral and also want to have sex with any or all genders. Like, Yeah.
Yeah,
I
so.
also think it adds to the, especially on screen, it adds to that sexy quality, especially when you have a female assassin, and then she's in a smoky nightclub, the lights are flashing, there's a hot girl, and
Yeah,
they
well,
start making out.
take the recent series Killing Eve by Luke Jenning. The first book is called Villanelle. And there's, you know, there were a series of novellas and they were picked up by Sky. And the actual TV show is pretty good. It's an incredibly good depiction of a woman with antisocial behaviour personality disorder on the sociopathic end of the spectrum, in my opinion. And I think that's definitely what he was going for. But sometimes she's sexy and sometimes she's a bit little girl. She's always manipulative. She's always pushing buttons to see what she can do. It's kind of like having a tamed predator. She's working for a specific agency, but she's really in it for the kill. She's in it because it interests her. Outwitting
Yeah.
people, outwitting the authority interests her. And she does live this quite parasitic lifestyle. And then they set a woman called Eve Pellestri to catch her. Eve Pellestri is a MI6 operative or ex-operative going into a sort of black ops division just literally to catch this one woman. And the two of them develop a fascination with each other because of, you know, respective intelligences and things, to the point where you kind of feel like, well, you could cut that sexual tension with a knife kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Villanelle is actually bisexual. You see her sometimes with girls, sometimes with boys. And it does actually fit her character because ultimately what she's after is a mirror to see herself in. So anybody who looks at her and sort of sees somebody beautiful and interesting and desirable and reflects that back to her is someone that she will spend time with until she gets bored of them. It's really, really interesting. But as you say, that does still add to the whole sort of, oh, well, you're an assassin, you must be sexually a bit fluid as well, particularly if you're female. If you're female, you're up for anything. You don't see very many male bisexual assassins.
No, you don't. I wonder why.
Although I will mention Girton Clubfoot from the Blood of Assassins series by R.J. Barker, who is actually bisexual, though you don't really see it on page, as it were, so far. But that seems to be more of an incidental, you know, fell in love with someone when he was 15, she died horribly, and then after that it was just a case of, well, almost any port in a storm kind of thing. They are very, very good books, although I wouldn't say he was actually a very talented assassin at all. Which brings me on to my next bugbear, my actual real bugbear. Assassins who never kill anyone.
It's okay. You can say Selena from...
Selena Sardothian from the Throne of Glass series. What bugs me the most is that we are told over and over and over again that she is the best assassin to have ever lived. You never see her do any of it. You never see her actually kill anyone. As far as we know, she's never killed anyone. So how did she get the title of best assassin? Seriously? How is that a thing that happened? And then, of course, halfway through that series, she turns out to be a bloody fairy because Sarah J. Maas is just mad on them.
So am I.
Anyway, it's a love-hate thing. She's a very typical S.J. Maas main character, whereby 90% of the time you're thinking, oh my god, you're so stupid. You can't disengage because the story's enough to keep you going. But you are going, you're so stupid, and you're not actually competent, and I don't know why all these people are interested in you, and why are they all fating you as if you're the second coming? Seriously. Inquiring minds want to know. It's very frustrating. And then there's a book called Assassin's Heart by Sarah Ahears, which featured Leah Saldana, who is part of, you know, it's sort of like an alternate Italy, but back when it was seven city-states.
Mm-hmm.
And there are crime families that head up each of these city states, and there's a specific assassin guilds for each one as well, and they compete, and it's part of a religious practice as well. That's something we haven't mentioned, assassination as part of a religion.
Well, I mean, we touched on it sort of in terms of start, but yeah, go on.
But yeah, they take the payment and then they offer the person to the black god, basically. Which sounds like a really nice way of dressing up the fact that you've just murdered somebody for money. And she never kills anyone either. She is the best assassin to have ever lived. She never kills anyone. It's like, don't just tell me, actually show it happening. Show me some base level of competence and intelligence.
I think a way that a lot of people do this is that they create situations where it's like this is the best person in their class. They have all the skills to be an assassin, because we also associate assassins with, you know, fantastic acrobatics and all sorts of other amazing skills. It's like, yeah, so they have all of that, and then for their inauguration, am I saying that right?
What are you trying to say?
I don't know, like the ceremony
inaugural
for them to, yeah, that's it. They've got to kill a person finally for the first time, and that's the moment where they stray and they can't do it. And that way they can say, yes, they would have been the best assassin, and they have all the skills of a master assassin, but they've never actually murdered anybody.
Yeah, and it's just
you can just about get away with that, because at least it's okay. Yeah, so in the last moment, then it's basically you're saying they're not a good assassin because they can't actually do the assassin part, but they do have all of the skills of an assassin. And yeah, I think that's probably the only way that you can really kind of get away with it. Whereas if it's just, yes, the most feared assassin of all time, and I'm like, where's the death?
Where is the death? It's like J. Christos Nevernight, featuring Mia Corveri, is killing very much for revenge, but she does join kind of an assassin school, which... Okay, I'm trash for assassin schools because I just think that's really cool. I think that's fun. And there is a religious component to it as well. it's kind of like the Elder Scrolls Night Mother type thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, she does, spoilers, but at the very end of Nevernight, the first book in that series, she does in fact balk at killing somebody who she's got no beef with. You know, she's not being paid to kill them. They're not a dangerous political person. They're not on her list of people she actually wants dead. So she's kind of like, yeah, I can't do this. So she doesn't do it. But she makes an active choice. It's not that she's balked at killing somebody, because by the time she gets to the assassin school, she has already cut a bloody swathe through the city she lived in.
Yeah.
And then you get onto the second book, and again, she kills a good 50 people in that easily. You know, she's not shy about it, but she's not in it just for the kill. She won't kill people if she's got no reason to. And it makes for a really interesting dynamic in the sense of, one hand, yeah, she really is an assassin and she's a badass. But on the other hand, does still kind of value life and would rather not, you know, she's still trying to keep hold of this tiny shred of humanity that she's got.
Yeah.
So... yeah, it's really interesting. And I'm there for an assassin that does actually, like, okay, well, you have got in my way and I've warned you a few times now, so I am going to kill you. I do feel bad about it, but I'm going to kill you anyway.
Yeah. I think also you can have assassin characters who are actually kind of more like soldiers.
Yeah.
In the sense that they're not there to kill innocent life. They're there to kill an enemy. And I think those are probably the characters that you can argue still have some form of morality. They're there, they are assassinating people. It is for a political cause, but they're doing it, you know, as if it was an invading army or something like that. The only problem is that it's obviously not on fair ground. But then maybe it's because there is no fair ground.
Yeah, possibly.
So, I've obviously got an assassin character in the form of Erin Foucan.
Yep.
What's your impression of Erin Foucan? Other than the fact he can't talk straight.
Well, he's got a lot of those those personality disorder traits, hasn't he? The glibness, the superficial charm, the manipulativeness, but I wouldn't say he was actually necessarily sociopathic, just that he has a few tendencies.
He definitely has tendencies toward it. He doesn't really have any qualms about killing anybody, but he has a kind of a code which he lives by, which he literally completely exists by, and he can actually form attachments with people. And he does feel something like love, and he does feel loyalty as well.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, he wouldn't go around committing child murder, but if he was told to kill a child in no uncertain terms, like, he would do it. It wouldn't really bother him.
Yeah.
And he's a really interesting character to write. He's a very fun character to write as well, because he's got that particular kind of voice. And I think I like the fact that he's just an asshole. Something which is going to happen is that he has a relationship with Torin Merle, as is sort of later revealed, is explored sort of later on within the series. So sorry, I guess spoilers, but he does appear in book one, so there you go. He has a relationship with Torin Merle. He will have a kind of a relationship with Rufus Merle, and both Torin and Rufus actually sort of end up liking Erin in an odd way, in that they kind of enjoy having him around, which is really interesting for me to write, because he's definitely not a good person, and I think it's really important to emphasize that. He's on their side. He will fight for them. He's loyal to them. But he's not a good person. He definitely couldn't be described as that at all.
Yeah.
Which is very much in sharp contrast with Rufus, who really is. And it is about the fact that Erin is oddly charming and is also completely honest, and that's something which is probably a little bit different about him in terms of other assassins. Eirin is openly an assassin who lives in Limra. He's never apologetic about the kind of person that he is. He's always completely open about it, because actually he's constantly getting what he wants. In terms, he doesn't have to disguise it to get what he wants. He just gets what he wants already, so he has no reason to hide.
Yeah.
And so he's 100% honest, and that's actually ultimately one of his most attractive qualities, in that he is unapologetically a bastard. So yeah, that's my assassin character. I love him. I love writing him. But I tell you what, I would not want him to be real. He's not a person you'd actually want out in the world.
No, definitely not.
Draw this to a conclusion. But before we do, I believe it's time for our Dissecting Dragons recommendation of the week. And we've got an unusual one for you this week. Jules.
Yes. Well, it's not that unusual.
It's unusual in that it's a different format.
It's unusual as in it's not actually a book from me, which I suppose makes it quite unusual. I have quite a few reading buddies, but two of my main reading buddies have got popular BookTube channels, and I strongly urge you to check them out. You want to look for Melanie, whose BookTube channel is Mel to the Any. She's relatively new. She only started in January, but she's a big book blogger type person, and she's really sweet. She's a lovely person to read books with, and she's kind of like my fantasy sci-fi twin. As in, we like all exactly the same books there, which is great. And there's the other one is Julie at Pages and Pens. So check hers out as well. She's been going a lot longer, so there's a lot of like backlist vlog goodness to get through. And I've just been basically totally addicted to hearing someone else's opinions about books for a change rather than just mine. They're obviously both big readers. They run buddy reads and things a bit more publicly on Twitter as well. And it's fun to join in with those sorts of things. So yeah, definitely check those two book bloggers out.
Thanks very much for that recommendation. We'll catch you guys next week.
Yeah, thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders, or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note that no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.